James Senegal once said, "Technology helps us become more efficient and productive, but our business still has a lot of art as opposed to strictly science." Are you tinkering, self-learning, self-improving, experimenting with home labbing? And do you want to become a skilled IT expert? Well, you've found your new home. This is the Home Labbers Podcast. On this show, we'll interview top experts and dig deep to learn how they got started and how they train their IT skills as a master martial artist in a Shaolin temple. And you know what? We're going to have fun along the way. This is the Home Labbers Podcast. And now your host, Vian Du.
All right, let's do this.
Gregory, welcome to the podcast. So excited to have you on the podcast.
Thank you. So glad to be here.
Before we dive into home lab topic, tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I've been a solution architect for the last 12 years. I've been working in IT for 28 years. My latest roles have been architecting large applications for the city of Houston, such as the court system, the financial system, the voice call manager systems, and then, of course, the virtual infrastructure that support those and plus other applications throughout the city. And so I've worked in numerous areas from nuclear to finance to energy, oil and gas, you name it, I've been out there.
How did you get started with home labbing and where did you get the idea?
Wow. The home labbing, mostly it came long ago. However, in the home labbing now, in the arena that you guys are in, I picked up more about 3-4 years ago so that I could educate and show people exactly what I were doing, what I was doing based on what they were doing. And I wanted to be a help in that area. So I would say somewhere around the 2016, 2017 is when I really got into it, when it made more of a real difference for the end users to really see how to create a home lab.
How did your first home lab look?
Wow. The first home lab started with peer-to-peer PCs. It was just that simple, peer-to-peer. But then when time came about, when you needed to duplicate replication certificates, DNS authentication, having multiple servers for virtual machines in order for them to run successfully, then the home labbing extended to probably 3 or 4 machines. They were big, beefy machines, but then it got really hot. So I had to go with some small form factor machines that can just as powerful, but much quieter. It didn't cause a lot of heat. So I went with the HP DL360 series. And that's what I've been running for the last 4 years. Small factor machines to support. And then I got away from the large iSCSI SANs and went to the Buffalo NAS appliances. They were small form factor, so they didn't cost much, but yet still provided a good NFS storage protocol for my virtual machines to run on. And of course, I have a 248-port network switch, 2 firewalls to support 2 incoming connections. I have a production and a DR-like setting in my home to support the different customer solutions that I try to come up with.
What was your first home lab project?
The first home lab project was it was a small form factor to duplicate a small financial business. It started with a single host with about 12 VMs, a single switch, internet connection, and using local storage. And it was enough local storage at that time to create what we call our little small. So I didn't have no switches. I didn't have anything big. It was just one big beefy machine with a small switch to connect to the internet with a firewall. The firewall was probably a little Linksys firewall at the time, right? So it's not one of these beefy Cisco firewalls that I'm running today.
How did you fund your home lab?
I started finding equipment on eBay, off-lease equipment. And as of today, a lot of people now getting in that market, they are now selling it on Facebook Market Live place. So now you can go on Facebook Market Live and you see a lot of the customers or resellers selling off-lease equipment that seems to be pretty good. Whereas at eBay, you had to go and find the right type of equipment, make sure you had the right specs before you purchase it, and then hope that when it got here, it didn't get damaged during freight or shipping, and that it was going to do exactly what you needed, right? So that's how I retrieved that equipment, and how I continue to find new update equipment to support the current versions for VMware that I run in my environment.
How your home lab looks right now, and what do you have now there?
Wow. So from a physical standpoint, I have two post racks. One rack is on one side of the house that has three servers, three hosts, two NAS storage devices, one 48-port switch, a KVM monitor and keyboard. The other one has both of the firewalls, another switch, and two servers in that area. And so I actually run fiber between the two switches to give it a 10 gig connection between the two switches. And so they're pretty good. They're pretty spaced out. Not bad. Not making a lot of noise, like my wife used to say. And they upstairs closed off in areas that that get enough cooling. So I have industrial fans that's running both of them that's twirling about, I can't even give you the CFMs that it's running, but it's enough to keep cool air running on them. And so the air condition runs through time and they run 24/7. These machines, they never get turned off. Never turn them off. Matter of fact, if you turn them off, turn them on, you end a life quicker on some of the older equipment that you purchase. So currently today, the software is VMware 7.03c. That's the hypervisor that's running. And then from an OS standpoint, I have Windows 10 and 11 serve desktops for the Horizon and Citrix environments. And then I have 12, 16, 19, and 22 running production servers and DR servers, which will consist of SQL servers, domain controllers, web servers, member servers for the members and application servers for the Citrix and Horizon farms. So that's my infrastructure that I'm running. I do have AT&T static connections come in. If I have fiber coming in, I have 10 static IPs, but I'm only using two of them. And then for my remote office that you see in the background, this is my command center. It's running one ThinkPad server that has about 32 gigs of RAM in it. 64 gigs of RAM in it. It's a shared of Windows 10/16 server that runs. I have two 55-inch monitors for displaying the displays out on the wall. And then I have wireless systems that's down here, Google Nest, and of course the AT&T wireless that I use here. So that gives me access up into that environment. It's a full service environment, like a production lab. I even have another Think server that that has a Veeam 11 that runs my backup and recovery of those virtual machines. So that's it. That's That's my connectivity from the office downstairs that connects to both of the racks upstairs on different sides of the house. So one APC is a smaller rack mount for the small equipment where the firewalls and the routers are in. And then I have the large APC to run all the other equipment. So if power goes out, my APCs will give me about 3 hours of uptime before they actually go down. They've been tested and tried a couple of times. So it's been true to have those available to me. I test backups all the time. One of the true tests of the backups were back in October when I upgraded my environment from 7.02 to 7.03. And boy, I almost had a fit because I was doing a major project for a customer and everything broke. The vSAN broke. All of my NFS segmentation network broke. I was trying to figure out how to put everything back. And so I had to basically restore my entire lab. And lucky I was able to do so by having good daily backups. I didn't have to hand rebuild anything. I just did restores.
Did you find a solution how to fix a problem?
Yes, I did. So just doing the easy to put it back the way it was wasn't good enough. What needed to happen was use my years of experience working with VMware and start correcting those problems. Finding that the vSAN didn't work during the upgrade and that the VCSA was down, I had to basically go through and start looking at logs. And looking at those logs made my job a whole lot easier. And so I documented everything. I talked to my local VMware rep, and then I start reaching out to the VMware community at VMware and start asking certain questions. And so I was able to give them a lot of good details about what happened in my lab so they can put out some of the fixes when it came out in December when they released the latest version to be deployed out. So that was a good thing. November, they actually did the major worldwide that they were pulling 7.03 from the download. So that was a good experience for me. It wasn't a pleasant one because I thought it was going to be an easy upgrade and I was going to run smoothly, but I learned by trial and error and I'm happy I did it. I wouldn't change it again if it failed again. I would go back through the process. This is the lab upstairs. You have the APC. You have another APC. The ThinkPad, which is my VMware server, that's the same type of server that I have downstairs. A Buffalo NAS. You have a DL380 G9, another Buffalo NAS, a G9, a 48-port switch, and then you got another G9. So when you look at that, I mean, I take time, I put pride, I label my cables, I color code them, try to make sure whatever's going to be what it needs to be in that lab. This is the other two-post switch that's in the closet in another room. You have the little cyber switch, you've got a firewall. There's another firewall that's not in this picture right now, but then you got another 48 port, and then you've got another cyber, and you've got another Buffalo, and then you've got thin clients. Those thin clients, what I use those thin clients to test Horizon and Citrix. So that's my environment. And then the picture of my lab downstairs, this is my office. This is where I'm talking to you from. I call it the G Center. So, you know, here on the Mac that I'm talking to you on, I'm always doing cybersecurity stuff. So I'm actually going through cybersecurity training class. Over here is actually a picture of actually my lab where I actually run the two servers. So you have this ThinkPad that's down and it's running these two monitors along with this unit. So I'm able to see anything I need upstairs. And of course here I've got another MacBook that I use from time to time in my lab. So when I'm doing some extra things that I need. So that's just basically my whole setup you know, how I actually do my work here in the lab. You know, you really can't go wrong. And then, as you can see, the books and everything that I'm always reading. I even have a little small, what we call a Raspberry Pi that I carry portable with me. It's my little portable Raspberry Pi unit that I care for demoing when I'm at little customers and they want to say, hey, have you messed with Raspberry Pi? I say, yes. And I carry a small, little switch. This little switch I carry with me. So it's really funny, but that's what I do. I mean, that's who I am. This is, just staying on top of the game, doing whatever it takes to educate and learn. Giving back is key for me. I don't want to never be caught not giving back to anybody. This is another stage of my lab when it was before. This is another side of the room. As you can see, it wasn't many servers. So it's all my lab is always revolving. Always. I was trying to find some of my older photos of my lab when I first started. It was, I had a large, I had three large 4U servers. My wife used to kill me, saying, hey, that thing is loud and it's hot. This is Virtual Greg here. As you can see, this is a Raspberry Pi and with the little switch in front of my MacBook. This guy does my little AI stuff. You know, I want to play around with my AI, so I program him to do all type of little small things. You know, he can't actually talk, but there's a speaker behind and his lights acknowledge you as you are playing around, right? So, man with toys. I can say that's just a man with toys. And that's basically it. I mean, when it comes to documenting a process, these are the type of Visio diagrams I produce. I try to tell a story. So if you start, this is 6.5, it's an old document. So with 6.5 showing you what it takes, all the connectivity points that when you're connecting a vCenter or a VSA up, all the things that we need to connect to that environment from a virtual standpoint. Then we dig in, we start to look at now if you want to make the high availability solution, now you come with two vSphere appliances and then you're making sure they can talk from whichever a data center, two data centers or a cloud environment, whatever it takes, right? All the connectivity and things that you would need, the accounts that you would need to set up appropriately. And then, of course, lifecycle manager, which is very important because with lifecycle manager, that's how you update your environment. So you want to make sure your environment is updated correctly. Log insight as well. So if you want to collect any logs in that environment, you have that capability. And then, of course, if you're looking anywhere from this is a Cisco FlexPod compared to just a standalone pizza boxes. Now you've got the full FlexPod, which is storage, chassis and blades. You have your fabricated connects. You have your Nexus switches connecting out to other different devices that you're going to join into that environment. And then here's another detailed wiring of how you would set up a pizza box to with your storage using either iSCSI and NFS connectivity through these switches. So I get very granular when it's time to do designs and we're going to put those out for anybody. This is just what helps me become a better architect. And again, this is Hyper-V, same thing, same method. So if regardless of VMware, Hyper-V or Citrix, same processes. Tell a story, and that's what you really want to do. And of course, with Citrix, you tell us the type of processes, what you want, how secure you want that environment to be, how it will connect into environment from outside all the way down to the bottom area, right? And then again, telling the story all the way through. So my lab basically allows me to create this type of documents that will help customers build an infrastructure that will be long lasting out of the box the first time. And as you can see, how I get very granular for every component that is required, so that way people can actually see. And this, I believe, executives and help desk personnel will read this, as well as the experienced engineers and architects that's out there. And again, just going in depth a little bit more of how I actually document each document. I kind of use the same background, but I actually hand create all of these Visios. They start with a little rough draft sketch, and they get placed in this this beautiful Visio format that I provide out to all the customers. Backup and recovery methods, the same process. So that way you can see how backup and recovery is done from both sides. And then if you're monitoring using VOps, you have the capability of seeing that. Log Insight, you have the dashboards in which you can see what's happening with any of the logs. Of course, Lifecycle Manager, that's the very beginning, the old version of Lifecycle Manager. Now, Lifecycle Manager is totally changed up. It's all embedded now into the web client for vSphere 7.0. And then here's a couple of old pictures. I was able to find some, but I'm glad I had these. It kind of started this way. This was the network rack that was in the closet. It's no longer in the closet anymore. This is when I had a big old ice cuzzy saying that was loud. It's no longer there anymore. So a lot of changes in my lab over a period of time. And then this kind of show you how things will be, how they will look and how they are set up in the environment. And that's basically it. Kind of tells you just a brief story. That's my, I call this the Greg's calling card. So when people want to know, okay, what your capabilities are, I actually have an updated version. It's on my Surface laptop, which I actually shut down. But I give them this, my calling portfolio calling card. It's basically what this is.
So simple and so easy to understand.
Yeah, and that's what having a really good lab really brings to the table, is making sure that you can tell a story and you cut from one time. You know what I'm saying? You cut from one time and then you make everything easy. Everybody's not that way, but I try to provide my knowledge to people to make their jobs easier down the road. And so labbing made easy. This is labbing made easy. Yeah. So the website is it's gregelectronics.com. So let me bring this guy up real quick. Right. And of course, this is my website. I did my VMware story, why I love VMware, why I became a VMware expert. I basically used my old motorcycle as a picture, because it's a love that you want to have when you just want to get away from IT. But I basically broke it down into why I love being a VMware expert. And it correlates so easy, because the time you take to ride and have fun, the time you take to learn and have a lab. And I started VMware back in 2004 with Mike Lavertic. He was like my mentor. How did I get to meet him? I met him in Canada. I was working with a company called Stanford Financial Services, and they sent me way to Canada for training. And I got under his toes, and man, I've been with him for quite a long time. And so I even framed his old document, 2.1. That's what these were the old commands, how you had to run VMware back in the day. Everything, you didn't have a really nice GUI that we have today. We had a GUI, but a lot of the work was really done via command line. A lot of the work was done via command line. And so through my lab is on my website. You know, created people or what? Paid people. You know, if you're going to be paid and you really want a good lab, hey, get into it, learn as much as you can, take it to the next level, wherever you can do it. You know, it's important. And of course, my Ghetto Chronicles, that's my, like my little podcast where I drop out knowledge to a lot of the guys just giving them some information. This is going to be updated coming Friday with a whole bunch of new data that's out there. So it's really going to give the end users who follow me and new people to get a better understanding of how they could be what they want to be in the VMware world. And this is just me. This is Greg Thompson. There are some videos here on V7 and 8. There are some more YouTube links that will be posted. And then, of course, all of my customers, they can read what my customers think of me. It's all there. These are all from CEOs to chief of technology, you name it. All these people I've actually worked with to provide great services to the companies I've done work for. So I hope this is helpful and that, everyone will be able to see the life world of Greg Thompson and why I love labbing. Let me see if I can pull this up here. Yeah, let me share one more thing with you. This is live. We're going to go live into my lab because most people don't see live. I don't mind people seeing my lab because I can rebuild my infrastructure over within a heartbeat. If it crashes, fine. I have the capability of resharing my lab out. So let's bring it up here. This is Greg Thompson Lab. I call it London and US. London has the three servers that's out there in my lab. Manufacturer is HP, as you can see. Let's minimize some of this stuff here. And this is US, which would be my DR environment. It's another set of, it's two servers with a two vCenters. So both of these vCenters are linked together. So battery status, let's minimize that link and then come here and minimize that link. So now you got a life cycle. And one server here, I did have another SQL server. I actually killed it because I'm going to create something else. And then what my SAN kind of messed up on me before I came up, I had to restart it. So you see these inaccessibles. When it's inaccessible, it's because the SAN itself, for some reason, became the data stores became unavailable. And so I think I've got a disk problem with one of these units. So I've got two SAN storages, but I have them in storage pools, meaning that you can break them up and add more storage pools to give the ability of have VMs to rotate from one data pool to another without you having to go in, oh, I need to create a new data store. When you have a storage pool, they work like a cluster. They migrate from one data store to the other. And of course, with the networking, I've got full distributed switches that's out there in the infrastructure, so I can run and do anything that I need in my lab. So this is real live work for me. And let's see if we can drop down here to see if you got domain controllers, Horizon View, appliances. So the VMs are inside the folders. You have Windows 10, 11. You have your templates. I actually have a 22 template that's actually being created right now. So that template has to run and I have to create some more updates. But as you can see what the requirement is, it's actually wanting 24 gigs of RAM, believe it or not. I mean, 24 CPUs, not two CPUs. I got 32 gigs. That when you're doing updates, it actually uses almost up to 24 gigs of RAM, which is crazy. It goes up and then it strolls back down. So this is like my lab. Once I finish doing some updates, everything will be fully up and running. You got your other servers that's in between here that's been deployed. Once they drops down, I think there's something, like I said, something wrong with the sand is why you're not dropping them down. But this is my lab. From a live perspective, you're able to see everything that needs to run. I can't run my operations manager because it's down. And I think my other unit is off. So I'm going to do some testing. Once I finish that testing, my lab will be fully up and running. Again. But this is a problem this is not a big problem for me. I can go in and fix that. I think I need to purchase a new SAN. But again, that's real time of my lab.
What scariest or most funny home lab story do you like to share?
There was only one time when we had a power outage here, and the power kept surging. And it surged a couple of times. It knocked off my sand storage devices. And so I lost a couple of drives. And so I was able to rebuild having some extra drives. It took about a week to get my system back up because of the rebuild process for those two slower sand storage devices, a Buffalo Terra station. So they don't build back as fast as some of the better ones, the QNAP and the Synology of such. The hard drives that send those are, you have some Samsung for the SSDs, and then of course the IBMs that came with the system. So I bought some extras when they sent them out. So they wasn't like an HP model or any other model. They were just whoever had them, they had IBM drives in those. And they 2 terabyte drives each.
How much knowledge have you gained while having a home lab?
A lot. Especially when I'm able to read, play, study. With the Windows 2016, Windows 2019, and now 22 OSs are out, companies are asking, how can we upgrade successfully? So now I get to now do in-place upgrades and see what the failures would be. And that's testing with SQL servers, web servers, application servers, seeing exactly what breaks, and deploying the antiviruses and the other security tools that most companies will have. And so when you do an upgrade, you have to find out if anything is going to break, what you need to have updated before, does the application going to be compatible with the latest version? So I'm able to do that and then document. And so when I go to a site, I'm on point, and they think, oh, you the glory guard. No, I just done all the homework before I got here. So that's one of the greater details of having a good home lab and being able to test.
What do you also think about you when they see your home lab?
Oh, wow. Well, everybody, you got mixed feelings. Some people are extremely happy because you have that nice lab. Some people are not. You know, they're not so much receptive. Oh, what's your light bill? I can't afford that. Yes, you can afford it. It depends on how bad you really want to have a lab and how bad you want to keep up your education in this growing IT field that we are in. So I get good and bad comments, but I think at the end of the day, I have to feel what's comfortable for Greg and what's going to keep bringing in the money into the household for learning. So that's key to me.
What is a home lab for you?
Oh, it's meaning more like a production environment, because it's an on-premise production environment where that I can simulate different scenarios. If it's embedded ESX host, trying to simulate the virtual and the virtual. If it's appliances that you're loading in environments such as Cisco, NetApp, or Citrix, whatever type of appliance you're putting in, you get to fully test that, right? And so you don't get to test that in the company because, one, you've got tons of engineers. If there's a lab that's there, it's be hard to share because everyone wants to try to break it to add their resources. Here, I don't have that. I get to do exactly what I want and keep it up there as much as possible.
What one piece of advice would you give for beginner home labbers?
I would say that if you are really, really interested in doing this, plan it out, take your time, find out exactly what you're trying to do so that way you can match up the hardware with your processes. Don't go try to buy a whole bunch of hardware that's going to drive you crazy because you're getting that big light bill. Or it's going to drive your wife or family crazy because it's too loud, too hot. Buy exactly what you need to do what you need. Everyone don't need a big lab like me. Labs are much larger than mine. Get something that's going to work in your area. If it's SAFTA starts with one server, one switch, one router, and a firewall, grow that and then I'll grow it to the next level. That's what I would say. Start small, plan well, and develop what you need.
Gregory, thank you so much, and have a wonderful day.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you. Goodbye.
You've been listening to the Home Labbers Podcast. Our passion is to interview the leading IT experts and get tech enthusiasts all the information they need to become an expert. So if you run at home enterprise hardware and software, and you like tinkering and self-learning, then you've found your new podcast. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed the show. Make sure to like, rate, and review. And we'll be back soon. But in the meantime, hit up the website at viondu.tech, on Twitter at #viondutrending, and #homelab. See you next time on the Home Labbers Podcast.